Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have a very good panel assembled, and we can't wait to talk about all kinds of cool stuff. And so let me get you started by introducing everybody. First, we welcome WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. Glad to see you made it. That traffic must have been horrible.
Oh, you know, it was. We were just talking about this. Judy and I and Teresa were just talking about. Now, first of all, I say this with only love and respect to the people who plow the streets in the city. But, however,
yeah, I knew that was coming.
It took me 45 minutes to get from Greenwich, New York, to the SUNY campus to drop off my wife. It took me 43 minutes to get from the SUNY campus to the WAMC campus, which is about 2.5 miles away. Yeah. I don't know how that works.
I love the fact that you've called it the WAMC campus. I've never heard that before, but I like it.
We have a campus here, sure. And Teresa, I know you were coming in from Cohoes.
Yep, Cohoes was, it is what it is. Water of Late, shout out to the wonderful people plowing in Water of Late, both yesterday and today. But when I did get to Almaty, but what I think I was encountering is people were shoveling snow into the streets. And then I was behind some sort of plow effort to remove snow that took a while, and then a school bus that took a real while, long
yeah.
time, and on and on. But it's still a mess out there. But I'm sure they're trying. So
oh, absolutely, they're trying.
It's an impossible task. I mean, with the cars parked so close together, I'm trying to be nice.
But yes,
they probably haven't had much sleep, and we thank them for what they're trying to do. Let's A for effort.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure what they get for outcome, but they get an A for effort.
You had to do shoveling, and you made it down.
Yeah, you know, I was here early for a roundtable, but very late for the media project, which we're going to do later.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, it all gets in at some point.
It'll be spring soon.
Teresa Bourgeois is here. She's a communications consultant, and Judy Patrick is the editor of the Daily Gazette, and it's a thrill to have you both here. Thank you very much for making it in one way or the other.
On such a quiet news day.
Yeah, a lot going on, so let's get to that. And get started. We begin with we have a lot of very interesting stories to discuss. I'm going to just start off with the travel ban. That was what happened last night. A federal judge in Hawaii issued a nationwide order Wednesday evening blocking President Trump's ban on travel from parts of the Muslim world, dealing a blow to the White House and signaling that Mr. Trump will have to account in court for his heated rhetoric about Islam. A second federal judge in Maryland ruled against Mr. Trump overnight with a separate order forbidding the core provision of the travel ban from going into effect. The rulings were a second major setback for Mr. Trump in his pursuit of a policy that he has trumpeted as critical for national security. His first attempt to sharply limit travel from a handful of predominantly Muslim countries ended in a courtroom fiasco last month when a federal court in Seattle halted it. Alan, what do you make of the 2.0?
Well, this is interesting because, you know, I'm not a guy who likes to say I told you so. But I did lay it out. You remember when Dershowitz and all those other characters were basically saying that they didn't think that the new language would be unacceptable. But it is. And it is based on something that I had warned about, which is if you take a look at everything that Trump has said in the campaign, after the campaign, about Muslims, then it adds, and you put that in the record, you say, heck no, this is just the same thing that you were doing before. So from my perspective, the court is doing exactly the right thing, although as it goes up the chain, we'll see whether the other legal eagles who will either accept or reject the lower courts agree.
I have to say, Alan, you're absolutely right about Alan Dershowitz. I was watching him last night, and he said, you know, how dare they take a look at what he said during the campaign? How dare they look at the rhetoric that he said to get elected and include that within the decision-making in this process? Now, whether they did or didn't, I don't quite know. But it seems to me, and I'm not a lawyer, certainly not to the extent of Mr. Dershowitz. However, it does seem to me that plays a part. If you say, I'm going to do this, and then you advance legislation that does that, doesn't that count?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. No, that's exactly right. Somewhere, Dershowitz went off the rails. I don't know what happened. You know, he used to be a great sort of mind. But, you know, you can be a great mind. You could teach at Harvard Law School. You can make a lot of money. But, you know, there are times you're wrong. For example, you might want to defend Klaus von Bülow, or you might want to do this or that. I'm not saying you're wrong, but, you know, he's capable of going for, you know, a lot of people saying, isn't he marvelous? And that gets to your brain after a while. And it changes your brain, the shape of your brain.
You're saying that
everybody knows that.
That like defending OJ may have an impact on how people view you?
Well, it might.
Teresa, what do you make of this?
Well, I did not read the ruling, but I read reports of the ruling, and it's my understanding that the judge did specifically reference what Trump had said, right? And opponents said that it would still function as an unconstitutional religious test, and I'm quoting here, albeit one affecting fewer people. And Judge Watson of Hawaii concurred with that. And it just, as I was reading about this and listening to the discussion, it kept striking me, you know, you can't unhear what Trump said. You know, he can't unsay it. We can't unhear it. And not only what he said, but what Giuliani said Trump's intention was. And I think that he is in this, Trump is being held accountable for his words. And there was also some discussion about not only Trump will be held accountable for his words as a candidate, but also people like Stephen Miller and Stephen Bannon might be deposed. There's discussion that this might be a lengthy litigation. And it just reinforces that it's a reminder we're still a nation that adheres to the rule of law and that nobody's above the law.
You know what's confused me from the get-go on this whole travel ban is initially it was posed as a temporary travel ban for 90 days while the administration scrambled to put together better vetting procedures. And nobody ever discussed what was going to happen after 90 days. Now, the wheels of justice move so slowly. While the wheels of justice are moving so slowly to consider all these appeals, why doesn't the administration work on their a sophisticated vetting procedure that they told the public that's all they needed, 90 days to do this?
Because isn't this political posture?
I suspect it just is playing once again to the base. Right. He figures if he holds the base, he continues to win. And it's interesting because he went to that town hall or whatever he was doing, the speech last night, and they applauded wildly.
It's a campaign rally, yes. I would like to get into too as to why that's paid for by the campaign and not, but that's another story.
Was it paid for the campaign?
Yes.
That's what, and they said they're going to do it every 2 weeks now.
Yeah, go ahead, Alan. I'm sorry.
So he gets wild applause for the so-called Muslim ban or whatever you want to call it for the travel ban, but when it came to the health care, to the ACA, it turned out that the audience was far less appreciative of that. They sort of sat on their hands. What does that tell you?
Right. Well, it's interesting.
It is. Now, on the ban for a minute, a couple of things that I thought was interesting was that you have to wonder how this affects the military. So, for instance, in the last 2 weeks, two different families of immigrants from Afghanistan, both of whom, in which case the husband had helped the U.S. military, and then they got a special papers to come. They were blocked from coming in. One family was held for a week and finally let go, and the other family was turned away. And if this is to make us all safer, you know, what effect is this really having? And I was interested in reading about the order that the a whole group of people, public universities, charities, and businesses, 5 dozen technology companies, including Airbnb, Dropbox, Lyft, TripAdvisor, joined in the brief objecting to the travel ban. But particularly universities are speaking out against this. And besides, you know, what the immediate politics of it, what's the long-term implication of it? Does it really make us any safer? Or does it put us, and particularly our military folks, at greater risk?
So from my understanding, this now most likely goes back to the Ninth Circuit, right?
Right.
Exactly where the last one went. And there was one word in that article that I read from the, I believe from the Post, of that it was a fiasco. I don't know. Was that a fiasco? I mean, it went to the court. They ruled, and I don't know if that was a fiasco.
I think there was an operational issue, and I'm not sure that they were talking about the one of the issues that I read is that the Solicitor General's office is not fully staffed, and so the person who was arguing it had to be in at one case and then on the phone to Hawaii.
Oh,
so they were back. So the mechanics of it yesterday were challenging because the Solicitor's office is not fully staffed.
So it'll go back to the Ninth Circuit, and but then,
and of course you know that President Trump has no love for the Ninth Circuit,
right,
or conservatives in general. In fact, the whole judiciary is an issue.
But you also have other cases that are moving through. You have the Washington State case, and then I believe
Maryland
case.
Yes,
and so and then the attorneys generals have. Is it the Maryland case they've all joined on? I'm not sure about that. But President Trump last night said that he wants to take this all the way to the Supreme Court and would like to revert back to the original ban, that he made it clear that this was not his idea to, as he said, you know, water this down. So I you know, this is where we need Rich. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know the mechanics of this, of what the next steps are. But
right, if he's going to do his, he calls this current ban watered down. If he wants to go back to his original, he's got to start at square one. Anything that would be litigated, I would imagine, would be the ban that the court decided on yesterday.
But to your very good point,
you know, I think.
Go ahead, Alan.
Well, I think the issue is the issue. He wants
right.
the issue.
Right.
I don't know that he cares that much about the outcome.
Yeah, I
think
agree.
He wants the issue because the issue goes to the base.
Well, he needs, just politically speaking, Alan, and I'll ask you this just on a purely political point, he needs a win at this point,
yep.
doesn't he? I mean, you've
he
got
does. No, he does.
You've got this, you have the health care bill blowing up, and the only thing that seems to be on the horizon that he's going to have a good shot with is Neil Gorsuch.
Well, but even the Gorsuch thing begins to have some holes when they look into Gorsuch's past and who he was working for and, you know, extreme right wingers and things of that kind. Look, this guy is in trouble right now. And you can see a sort of bunker mentality. I'm talking about the president. You see a bunker mentality. Who's he talking to? Tucker Carlson, you know, remember the old days, he was on everybody that would have him on, Morning Joe, CNN, you name it, he was there. Now we are at Tucker Carlson, who is hardly, you know, a middle-range voice. So I think he's in retreat, and I think it's beginning to take its toll on the guy.
With that said, do you think that there's a chance that Neil Gorsuch could not be confirmed?
Yes.
Really?
I do.
Okay.
Because here's what's happened. Victory has been tasted by the anti-Trump forces, and that just gives them more and more ammunition to go forward in other ways. There's a tremendous amount of research being done on Gorsuch right now, as I say, who he was working for, what he was doing. I think right now you would have to presume the guy's going to get appointed. On the other hand, get ratified. However, on the other hand, we don't know what's going to come up now. Most people have a certain number of skeletons in their closets.
Well, the hearing, just real quick, Teresa, the hearings will be next week. We will we'll be running those on both Monday and Tuesday. Monday will be the opening statements. Tuesday will actually be the meat of it, and we'll be running those here.
You're running them live?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd be surprised.
Indeed, we are.
You may be right, Alan, but I'd be surprised unless something unusual comes up that he doesn't get approved. But I think on this travel ban, I think that it is a very powerful rhetorical point for Trump, for his base, though I do think if for the country it's very damaging. But it does distract attention of his base away from the facts of his health care bill and the implications of his proposed budget cuts and the interest rate hike and all of the other things that are going on. And so that's the sad fact of it.
Alan, you have me wondering.
By the way,
you have me wondering about what President Trump's goals are. If he doesn't want to get the travel ban really enacted, he just wants to play to his base. Is all he trying to do just have good poll numbers, or does he really want to get something accomplished? And if he does, what is that thing?
Well, the thing seems to be, not to be too flip, but I think it. Teresa hit on it of having these rallies every 2 weeks and having that adulation and praise seems to be what it's about.
It's the Bannon theory of disruption. If you read
it, it could be. But did you see? I was watching the audience behind Trump. You know how they were wildly enthusiastic in the first several? They weren't. They were sitting on their hands. I'm telling you. I could only describe it as being fairly disinterested. As I say, the Muslim ban got them a little bit, got a little bit of excitement. But otherwise, you got the feeling somebody got us here, but now what do we do?
They bust them in. Go ahead, Teresa. We have about 30 seconds.
And there were a lot of other empty seats there. But the other thing that this does is give Trump some protection if there is an incident in the United States, and he can say, "I told you so. I told you so. It's all because of you." And I think that's an unfortunate, frightening fact. But my real worry is for the military around the world, and our diplomats around the world, and what kind of pressure this puts on them, as well as for the individuals. Think about the scientists, the professors, the faculty, the staff, the others who are afraid to have their family members come or afraid to leave the country because they don't know what might happen to them if they do, just because of what their religion is. It's really not what our country's all about.
Let's pause there.
And I just want to say real quick, he'll be looking for any of those incidents, as you indicate, Teresa, that will justify where he's going.
We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Alan Chartok is here, Teresa Bourgeois, and Judy Patrick, and we are thrilled to have all of them with us. We are thrilled to have you with us, too. Panel at WAMC.org. We'd love your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Scott writes to us and says, "Where are we on the new and improved vetting procedures? According to candidate and President Trump, that was the purpose, extreme vetting to enhance national security." This is the point you were making, Judy. Now the president is simply using this issue to bash the separations of power and play to his base. Sad, says Scott. Michael writes, "What did the administration think was different in this ban that would be more acceptable to the courts?" That's a valid question.
Yep. So Iraq is
out,
right? Because the military was very, very, the U.S. military was very, very concerned. They said that it was hurting them in Iraq.
Right. Green card holders weren't caught up in this ban.
And visa holders. Yeah. And let's see, it would have ended with few exceptions, the granting new visas and green cards for people from 6 majority Muslim countries, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen, for at least 90 days. Also stopped all refugees from entering for 120 days and limited refugee admissions to 50,000 people in the current fiscal year, which is less than half of what was supposed to be.
Ursula writes to us and says, "I still don't understand how you can justify a travel ban to protect the U.S. from terrorists when the only country where terrorists actually came from, Saudi Arabia, is not even on the list. The hypocrisy is mind-boggling."
The president met with Saudis visiting the U.S. yesterday, and there were no people from the Department of State or his national security team in the room in that meeting.
The State Department was, or the Secretary of State was in, starting his Asian trip.
But no others.
But it then was, also ditched the press, right?
Right. It was Steve Bannon, yeah. Reince Priebus, none of our folks from the State Department or
Alan?
National Security.
I just wanted to go back to the earlier point about Iraq being ticked off that, you know, the people there would, it would be harder for them to operate. Well, yes, on a smaller level, one can buy it. On a larger, universal level, one wonders whether these bans don't hurt you with every Muslim everywhere in the world outside of the United States and maybe inside the United States. So it seems to me that it isn't a matter of, okay, we're going to we're going to make this better, whatever you want, and we are going to allow the Iraqis to come back to be back. They can travel, but the rest of the world can't, or even six countries can't. It just sends that message that Muslims aren't welcome. And then, of course, all of these court cases, and with the judges basically agreeing with that premise, it does seem to verify what we have to be worried about.
Well, Alan, to reinforce your point, some experts that I was reading were concerned that, remember the raid on Yemen that killed the American soldier, that occurred the day after this ban, and some of the people speculated that some folks in Yemen were so disturbed by it that's potentially one of the reasons why it might have gone wrong, because we were counting on intelligence from folks on the ground in Yemen. So, you know, that's speculation.
Well, yes.
But decisions have consequences, and these kinds of decisions reverberate all around the world. That's why I worry about the danger that this kind of heated rhetoric puts our mm-hmm. military folks in and our diplomatic folks who are trying to, you know, protect us all over the world.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't foment goodwill. I would be interested in seeing a poll of Americans to see, you know, where they stand or what they believe when it comes to different religions, and to see whether or not we're progressing or regressing on that issue, whether all this rhetoric is making things worse or whether or not, you know, the people all over America are starting to understand that, you know, diversity is good for us, or, you know, different religions are accepted, and we don't want to be, you know, we don't want to be exclusionary, that the freedom of a religion is important. I don't know if anybody's doing that kind of trending to see what's happening in our own country. Mm. So whether or not we're getting, you know, we're advancing, we're progressing or regressing.
And I'm not.
I do think it's very. Just one last thing. I do think it's very important that everybody remember that there's some very bad people out there. You know, there are people who want to blow up the United States. They want to tear down our towers. They want to kill us. They want to make Israel, push Israel into the sea. They want to do this and that. But those people, the point here is that those people are helped by some of these policies, not hurt. Their PR is enhanced by Trump doing what he's doing.
And also, you want to keep our folks who are vetting for that kind of thing focused on the greatest dangers. And so if they're spread too thin, you know, if you make the haystack bigger, it's harder to find the needle, right? And so that, you know, that's the challenge here. And I also, you know, I'm no expert in Dutch politics, but it was also interesting and, from my point of view, nice to see that they rejected some of this hateful religious-based rhetoric in their vote yesterday.
The
Yes.
Let me go back to the letters real quick. Tony writes, Obama said, if you like your doctor, et cetera, and still constantly got blamed for this statement that turned out to be a mistaken idea, yet Trump says things all the time that either seem or are untrue, and so what is the reaction from the right? Well, that's one of the big existential questions, isn't it? I mean, there does seem to be a double standard there, right?
Yeah, I like to, you know, I come from the tradition when where if the president says something, you can hold them to it. But if you remember, Bush's famous words, he wouldn't raise taxes. And so that's one of the reasons politicians get in these troubles. You can't count on them. Trump obviously is an extreme example of you can't count on what he says to be true. He doesn't believe, or none of the words he uses seems to be, he doesn't want us to take them literally.
And I apologize for being, if I may get letters on this, because it just seems to me that if you say President Bush saying, read my lips, no new taxes, and you get to a point, and at that point you believe that you can do it without raising taxes, and then you get down the line and you become president, and you sit down and you say, all right, there's no way we can do this without raising taxes. Isn't that different? I mean, I guess you could call it a lie, but isn't that different than what we're seeing now, which is, oh, by the way, he wiretapped my phones?
Yes, it is different. But it's a progression. It's of the same. It starts with Bush. I mean, it didn't start with Bush. It started with George Washington.
Yeah, 20.
But this started with this particular thing started with Newt Gingrich. But sorry, go ahead.
It becomes. I agree. The base seems to accept the fact that you can't really take what President Bush says for truth, and they seem to be discarding it. I think the rubber will hit the road when things actually start to happen. If the healthcare bill does get approved, and people start to lose coverage, or they don't get the tax credits that they think they will, I think actions is what will actually change things.
In terms of his words and his actions, not being consistent, I was so struck when I listened to his rally in Tennessee last night, where he was. Got great applause about build the wall, build the wall, build the wall. And for 2 years, he said Mexico will pay for it. Yet, and I don't know the number off the top of my head, his budget that's out today has billions of dollars. And it was at 11 billion, yeah. Billions, 11, I think, 12 more. And it will be up to $24 billion to pay for the wall. And so clearly his words and his actions, I guess he talked about, oh, I love science last night, yet his budget that he announced, released today, has deep, deep cuts in science. He talked about how he cares about the climate. He had just come from Michigan, where he announced that they were rolling back fuel efficiency standards. And those are so, those are completely inconsistent, yet in some respects he's not held accountable. But people around the world listen to his words. And when a president speaks, those words do matter.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll go to a few more letters and move on to some other topics as well. We welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Judy Patrick join us this morning. We welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org. We'll get to those right after this.
Support comes from Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York. Installing solar-powered systems throughout the Northeast with installs completed in one day. ApexSolarPower.com. TEC Land Surveying, providing surveying and mapping services for transportation, infrastructure, and development projects throughout the WAMC listening area. TECLS.com for more information. And The Spot, 518, a weekly arts, entertainment, and cultural publication for the Capital Region, available online in newsstands and at venues. TheSpot518.com.
Good Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel and to our discussion this morning. Got two letters that are slightly off topic, but I thought I would include them just because they're amusing. One was Agnes said, I too was traveling through Albany today. Not really amusing, but off topic, but interesting. I shouldn't say amusing. I too was navigating through Albany early today. It was interesting to see how many cars had one traveler in it, the driver only. Wouldn't it be great if people thought about carpooling more in general, but especially on days like today? No travel advisement I heard in the last 48 hours encouraged that option. Think about the reduction in the carbon footprint.
Yeah, I should hats off to Joe Donahue, who does carpool with his lovely wife.
That's right. We take one vehicle and go down. And although if she had caught me from the campus to this campus, well, she would have just seen me. But that's all right.
Good point.
Andrew says, no reason to wait for the show to start to comment on the 19 agencies the president wants to eliminate. We want to be vigilant. The African Development Foundation, the Appalachian Regional Commission, Chemical Safety Board, Corporation for National Community Service, Corporation for Public Broadcasting, I'm not going to read all of these, but the National Endowment for the Arts, National Endowment for the Humanities, the Northern Border Regional Commission, the U.S. Institute of Peace, the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, and the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, just to name a few. The budget is out.
We know what the president's priorities are. It's astounding. It's a war on the war on poverty.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Alan.
Well, I did say that the CPB was going to go, that the endowments were going to go under the Trump plan. Now, I expect that it's such a small part of the budget that some of them, like particularly humanities and others, will be allowed back in. That's my bet, because it's so small. That'll be a, you know, one of the talking points for some of the Republican members of the Congress who will say, yeah, well, we voted against that. We're not going to allow that to happen. And I remember when Chris Gibson, for example, when he was congressman in the district that John Faso is now in, voted against the defunding of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. He did it. He got an incredible amount of credit, but he stuck with the Republicans on many of the other things. I expect that that's what's going to happen with many of these people right now, because it's so small. With one other thing to say, and that is, I truly believe that Trump is in a war against the intelligentsia, and that includes colleges and universities. I think they are high on his list of the people who he thinks didn't vote for him. I love the undereducated, he said during the campaign. And well, we all thought, well, that's funny that he said that, but he meant it. But he meant it. I take him at his word, and I think that when you see these symbolic cuts in the intellectual agencies of government, that you see what this guy's really all about.
You know, in small town America, some of these programs that they don't have many contact with the federal government or federal government largesse, but it's some of these small programs are the ones that small cities or small governments will know that came from the federal governments. Otherwise, they don't see a lot of, you know, they're not, their kids may be in the military, but they don't, these community development block grants and a lot of these other federal programs are things that they do touch them, and they will miss them once they're gone. Whether or not they remain out of the budget remains to be seen, because I think a lot of Congress people will fight for them.
I also think that there's a disconnect that that there are some people who may respond to his rhetoric about, you know, we have to make the government smaller. I hate the federal government. I hate the federal government. Government's too big. It's intrusion in your life. But they do rely on Meals on Wheels. And, you know, Don't think of that. They do rely on the home heating assistance, in both of which he is proposing to cut dramatically. You know, I'd be interested to know, I was wondering about, say, in Essex County or Washington County, Warren County, how much money goes to those counties for the fuel assistance? How much goes to those counties for Meals on Wheels? And will somebody like Congresswoman Stefanik, is she going to support these proposed cuts in those programs? I mean, this calls for a 30% cut in the Environmental Protection Agency, a 29% 10% cut in the agriculture department. How is that going to affect rural America? I'm guessing it's not going to be targeted to agribusiness, those cuts, because they have lobbyists. State Department, 28.5% cut in the State Department. I keep thinking of the Benghazi hearings. How many different hearings costing the taxpayers how much money, all saying that Secretary Clinton did not give the support needed to the State Department, and yet and President Trump ran on Benghazi is one of his key issues, and yet they're gutting the State Department. You know, what kind of support are we providing to those folks around the world? And when you cut science as deeply, how can you say I'm for creating new jobs and innovation and cut science funding? They're completely interlinked. He may not know that, but they are.
You know, the concern.
But you raise a very interesting point about people holding, and I'm seeing it for the first time ever in my somewhat long career. I am seeing people willing to find out what their individual congressmen are doing. So when you say, will Stefanik vote with the Republicans or with the budget, or will she make a fight over things that are more important to her district? Those are things that I would bet you a quarter on what's going to happen, and she'll be there with the budget. Nevertheless, it is interesting that people are holding Faso and Stefanik and Tanko and everybody else responsible for what they do. And that's something I think a little bit new that never has really happened before, not in my career.
You know, this whole conservative approach to smaller government and reduced spending, you see it when Trump doesn't have the State Department officials in the room when the Saudi officials are there. I think it's a distaste for bloated bureaucracy that you're seeing evidence there, but in that kind of strange way. But so people may ideologically be against federal overspending, but when you really have to identify the actual spending, people will wake up and notice. Maybe they won't care. Maybe they'll think, you know, Meals on Wheels, maybe that would be better if the local church raised money and did that on its own. I mean, that's part of the Reagan approach to, you know, taking care of some of these fundamental issues. Maybe they'll say, well, maybe that research needs to be funded by the pharmaceutical companies. That's what you get from the conservative viewpoint, that maybe these things aren't the responsibility of the federal government.
Let me get to a couple of letters before we go to a break. Joseph says, now that we've arrived at the truth that there was no wiretapping, when does consequence for the accusations come into place? I think the president would probably argue that we have arrived at the point where it is that we have come down to the truth. Correct? I mean, I think it's still alive in his mind, in other words.
Propaganda 101, Goebbels 101. Sure. Just keep on saying it. And... You know, I'm interested in what you said, Teresa, about fascinated by the idea of how this all works. Big Pharma, for example, they are big winners because somebody said, well, the conservatives say they should fund the research. Not necessarily. They send their Case Streets people out because a lot of the fundamental scientific research that leads to the incredibly expensive drugs that we pay for is done by the federal government.
Right.
So if you think they're going to want that to happen, think again.
Right. A lot of companies have gotten out of the business of research, direct research, and, you know, long gone are the days of AT&T, you know, Bell Labs and such. And a lot of research is done jointly with universities. I mean, think of IBM does incredible research, but they do it in conjunction with places like RPI, where I used to work, and universities all over the country and all over the world. And that's where, I mean, the internet, where did the internet come from? It came out of DARPA-funded research. A lot of the tools and technologies we take for granted come out of federally funded research, and often with universities. And people just, I think, don't realize that.
Let's go to the editor of the Daily Gazette to ask her how things are going in Rotterdam.
Love this story.
Yeah, so in Rotterdam, New York. They all went there. Rotterdam, New York, which is a lovely place on the western edge of the city of Schenectady.
Yes.
You Google Rotterdam, New York, I often do, and I get a lot of things from the Netherlands. But apparently this past Saturday night, a lot of people in the Turkish nationals were very upset with Rotterdam, not New York, but Rotterdam over in Europe, because the Rotterdam had refused a request by the Turkish ministers to hold a pro-Turkish rally in the Rotterdam town square. So Turkish nationals decided to bombard the Rotterdam police department with phone calls in which they played Turkish national anthems or Turkish national songs. And so these calls started to come into the Rotterdam, New York, the call center at the Schenectady County. It's a combined communication center. So they started to get bombarded with these calls. They're playing this music and they're speaking, Turkish, and they couldn't figure out what it was.
That's a great story.
They didn't give us an exact number of the number of calls, but it was a lot. And once they figured it out, they touched base with Verizon and they managed to reroute the calls. Apparently, the people who were making the calls didn't understand that the 1-518 was an American call. So
they got the wrong country code.
Yeah, need a new a phone book and a road map. That's all you need.
Yeah, there are a lot of places in New York State with these. There's an Athens. There's all sorts of
Rome.
Rome. It could happen anywhere. But indeed, Rotterdam got a little taste of international politics this past weekend. It's died down.
That's a fascinating story.
If you took a car to Rotterdam or a jet to Rotterdam in Europe, which way would it take longer to get to? I mean, I remember when WMHT, Joe is biting his lip right now and saying, oh, here he goes, he's going to get himself into real trouble. But I remember when we had offices at WMHT over there.
Oh, in
on
Rotterdam,
Tulip
that's right.
Street.
Yep.
Right, remember that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah.
I swear I could have gone to California faster.
You're dissing the road system over there. No. Rotterdam's a lovely town with a wonderful network of roads.
When I was a college student, I worked for an independent bookstore that then got bought out by Price Chopper.
Indeed, in Rotterdam.
In Rotterdam.
You have to put the word the in front of Price Chopper because that's the way we do it in the Berkshire. The Price Chopper. Yeah.
And I'd have to drive over there, and I have to agree with Alan. It seemed like he would drive forever. I felt like I needed breadcrumbs coming out of the exhaust pipe just so I could find my way back.
Actually, I went to a great restaurant there not long ago, but I tell you, I'm not sure how I got there. I'm not sure. The food was fantastic, but I have no idea.
No.
But great, great story, though. Thank you for sharing that one.
We'll set the reset button. We'll be back. Ray has news, for goodness sakes. We'll hear from him right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, and Teresa Bourgeois joining us this morning. And, of course, your letters panel at WAMC.org. 5 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Thursday morning, the 16th of March. We go to the wiretap story. We mentioned this, but according to Devin Nunes, the evidence of Trump Tower being wiretapped doesn't seem to exist. This, according to the House Intelligence Committee chair, along with ranking Democrat Adam Schiff, expressed doubt yesterday about President Trump's claim of a 2016 wiretap at Trump Tower. And this, of course, in addition to James Clapper, who has said that it did not happen, the former president of the United States, who said it didn't happen, the FBI director, who was set to testify on Capitol Hill on such matters on Monday, said that it didn't happen. So we are left with a great gap of evidence when it comes to this issue. We can only assume that, as Alan indicated earlier, that, yeah, so you keep saying it, and yet All the evidence points that it didn't happen. So at some point, does somebody, what do you do? Do you step it back, or do you just ignore it?
And what are
that's exactly right. What are the consequences? Zero for him. And what he says is the ultimate justification for lying is not to admit, but to say, oh, you know, I said it with quotes around it. I said it with quotes around it. I said, President Obama tapped my telephones, but I said it with quotes around it. Can you believe that?
No, I can't, especially when you say that it's a fact. You use the word fact. Also, out of the 5 tweets, you only put the quotes around it twice. And you went after and you said that he was a bad, sick guy. So you're going directly after the president. You're not going after the administration. You're not going after a larger shadow power that was under his control. You're going directly after the former president of the United States.
And as so many of our writers are pointing out, meantime, no more meals on wheels, you know, no more environmental protection, and the beat goes on.
And even if he put quotes around it, it meant some sort of broader surveillance. Has that been proven at all?
And Alan, I'll ask you this question, and it's a distraction. We call it a distraction, but it always seems to backfire where it starts to cause more investigations, more problems, and more questions for him. Now, like, I can't assume that he wants that, right? He just wants the distraction. He doesn't want the spotlight shining so bright on him and everybody coming back to him for information. At least I can't imagine that he does. And you just wonder at what point that whole strategy starts to backfire on him.
Well, you know, we're in the middle of the 100 days, the first 100 days. My own view of what he was trying to accomplish was to be the biggest of big bullies. And he thought because he would go after even a Republican congressman or senator from now and then, everybody was going to be scared to death of him and he was going to get everything he wanted. Now, as I have said before, the sock is beginning to unravel. And I think your point is very, very well taken, because now the bullying technique is not working. He is losing on several fronts. Whether that turns around, whether he can reestablish himself, is one thing. But I know, as I said before, there's a sort of a bunker routine going on here in which he is appearing on Fox. Yeah, Fox and Tucker Carlson, of all the great journalists. But he's not going on Morning Joe this now and in the same way. And he's not going on these other places where he used to show up all the time. And so back to the bunker.
Well, and also, I mean, there's that bunker mentality, but also this idea that when you have all of these things that are going against you, and you don't have the wins, if you will, which seem very important to him. Mm. I mean, the last time this happened, then he came out and did his now infamous press conference, and you wonder, so are we getting to one of those boiling points, and is that going to become a cycle as well?
You know, and don't forget that he tweeted the allegation that President Obama wiretapped Trump Tower. He tweeted it to how many hundreds of thousands of Twitter followers we have, and a lot of those people believe it, even though the facts haven't proven it to be true. There are a lot of people out there who, if you ask them, will say, "Yeah, the Obama administration wiretapped Trump Tower."
Absolutely. But there's another side to that, and that is there will be, as I was saying to somebody yesterday, there will be 5 to 10%, I expect, of the people who you're talking about, Judy, who are, in fact, going to become embarrassed by this guy. And when there's universal embarrassment, when it's on everybody's lips in the late night talk shows and on Saturday Night Live, if he loses 5 out of the 40, or even 10 out of the 40, done, washed up, through, finished.
So let me ask this question on that very point. Mike Pence, who had the moral outrage of talking about how Michael Flynn lied to him, get rid of Michael Flynn because he lied to me. So now you're out, you're talking about the president saying he was wiretapped and carrying his water. It comes out that, okay, where is he? Does he not say something at this point that he has been deceived by the president? Does he not? Now, I mean, I know, of course, the political ramifications of that, but I'm just asking the question of at what point does he start to turn and say, okay, I have to back off?
No, doesn't do it. Doesn't do it. He was picked for a reason. He was picked for because he was a yes man. And I'm not so sure, Joe, when you cite the other case of Flynn, that they didn't know they were in real trouble with Flynn, who it now turns out with the Turkish connection, yeah, and everything else that they didn't know about. So it may have been that they unleashed Pence and said, you go do it. Not a guy doing it on his own and not following orders. And by the way, while we're on that subject, I know you're going to get there sooner or later on the show, but it's worth mentioning that Justin Trudeau brings Ivanka to the to a show about immigration and immigrants coming to the United States, which is very pro-immigrant. So one wonders if they're not building some kind of a distraction. Okay, we'll have the right wingers, we'll have the Bannons, but we'll have Ivanka on the arm of Trudeau, so that you get the benefit both ways.
Yeah. The show Come From Away, it was about 9/11 and the planes that landed in Canada during that time, and the relationships of the local people and the people on the plane who were getting the information.
I think this wiretapping issue is, I mean, clearly it appears he didn't tell the truth. I'm not sure if when he said it, he really understood the ramifications of what he was saying. I think it's good that Congressman Devin Nunes, who's the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, finally did come out and say it's not to be believed. But one of the things that he said in his statement yesterday, Congressman Nunes, was that he said, if you're taking Trump's tweets literally, which he said you shouldn't. Now, he's saying that you shouldn't take what the President of the United States says literally. Let's step back. I think this is a distraction. We're talking about this as we need to, but we're not talking about the health care bill and implications for average Americans, how it's a big tax giveaway for the wealthy. We're not talking about the EPA and climate change and such. But at some point, there's going to be a national or global event. And what are the implications when you cannot take the words of the President of the United States literally? This has really serious long-term implications. It's got a whole range of implications. It's serious. The charges that he made against President Obama are serious and not true. The implications, if they were true, were serious for Trump because of the way wiretapping works. It would have required a judge's order, and that's they have to have a high threshold of facts to get that order. It's really complex, and it's a distraction, but it's a dangerous distraction. And it's dangerous that you cannot trust what the President of the United States says.
Right. If he says something, he can move the stock market up and down. He can affect he can affect the stock price of a company. Just ask Boeing.
And again, last night, if you listen to the things that he said, so much of what he said last night at his rally in Tennessee was not true. And it was not consistent. It was inconsistent. The things that he was telling his supporters he was for was inconsistent with what is in his budget proposal today.
Two quick letters from one from Robert who says, the thing that a bully does not understand is that there is always someone tougher than they are. And George says, Mike Pence equals situational morality.
That's a good description.
Situational morality.
You know, one of the things that Trump supporters like about him is the fact that he is not a politician who watches every word. So he doesn't come up through that tradition. They think of him as plain spoken, but there's a difference, I think, between being plain spoken and saying widely inaccurate things.
And just look what he did on Vice President Pence was on Capitol Hill yesterday, meeting with the Freedom Caucus. Those are the very conservative Republicans who think that the healthcare bill goes too far. And so on the one hand, he's in meetings reportedly promising them that, you know, one thing, and then he goes and meets with other Republicans and promises them a different thing. And maybe that's all part of working out a compromise. But again, if your word can't be trusted, how do you make a deal?
Let's move on to another story. Let's go to the sexiest story we have before us regarding the Fed. And the Federal Reserve, which raised its benchmark rate on Wednesday for the second time in 3 months, this time to a range between 0.75% and 1%, is finally moving toward the end of its nine-year-old economic stimulus campaign, which began in the depths of the financial crisis. But Janet Yellen, the Fed's chairwoman, said at a news conference after the decision was announced that the Fed did not share the optimism of the stock market investors and some business executives that economic growth is gaining speed. It still plans to move slowly because the economy continues to grow slowly. She suggested that the Fed would have plenty of time to adjust its plan should President Trump and Congress cut taxes or spend massively on infrastructure. Alan.
Well, you know, there is an elephant on the table, of course. Yellen, I think, was more restricted in the Obama administration than she is in the Trump administration. And so she's doing what she thinks is right. It's a very small upward tick. And she is basically warning about profligate spending and what they might have to do then. Nevertheless, I wouldn't bet the ranch that Trump isn't going to explode about what Yellen has done here and say that she's trying to undermine him. But clearly, we've had a lot of inflation in this country. Hey! Look at it this way: when I was a kid, a Coke was a nickel. That is not true anymore. And if you say, okay, we're going to keep inflation down to 2% a year, 5 years, that's 10%. 5 years goes fast, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Yeah, and with compounding even, even more.
Although the next 4 years may go very slowly, but yes.
You know, How much is it?
Hey, Joe, you're an expert on this. How much is a Coke now?
He's got one right in front of him.
It depends on Pepsi. It depends on where you go.
That's my point.
Anywhere from $1.75 to $2.
Yeah, I love listening to Janet Yellen because she talk about someone who cares about words and says them very precisely and uses, you know, she's very careful about what she says. She's very deliberate. Her tone is very reassuring, almost plotting. But compared to the president, you can tell how she knows how much she values words and what the potential meaning and how it will impact the stock market and, you know, the economy in general.
And indeed.
I think this, even though this is just a small interest rate increase and predicted, it struck me that the people who will feel the impact of this are the, you know, average working Americans, a lot of the people in those Trump rallies, because it will, they won't get any of the upside. It's not going to raise interest rates it's not going to raise their CD rates or anything like that, but it will make it more expensive to borrow a home. It will make credit cards more expensive. It will make education loans more expensive. And so at the same time, you have proposals in healthcare that are going to raise average or poor and working families' premiums if the Trump care plan goes through. You're having these cost increases as well. And if you combine that with some of the budget cuts in programs like Meals on Wheels and heating assistance, that the poor and the near poor and working families and middle class are going to take a real economic hit. And so it will be interesting to see what impact that will have on those folks.
You know, but I think that population...
As Pete's saying, when will they ever learn? I mean, after all, that's where the base is, right?
Right.
But I also think that population would also benefit if the rate for a simple savings account or a CD would rise, because I continue to be worried about the fact that there are people who don't want to invest in the stock market, that don't really have any great avenues to put money aside, and kids aren't learning that if they put money in the bank, it will grow, because the interest rates are below 1%. They're as close to zero as you can get.
But they say this won't. It's so incremental that this is not going to cause banks to increase CD rates, but it will cause them to increase credit card rates, and you already see mortgage rates going up. So they'll get the downside but not the upside. And it also it'll cost the government more to borrow money.
Well, will it cause them to do it, or will they, as Plunkett once wrote, will they see their opportunities and take them to raise credit card interest rates, which, of course, you know, they've always done. I mean, I don't know that it's a tiny little flick by Yellen that creates their opportunism of raising credit card rates.
Yeah, well, they say credit card rates will definitely go up, and clearly mortgage rates are going up. And
sure, anytime they can make money, they'll do it.
Right. That's a good question.
How much higher can credit card rates go?
Yeah, that's a very good point. All right. Time for, let's see, we have just the one story left, and so quickly, because we only have about 2 minutes left. Justice Department announced Wednesday the indictments of two Russian spies and two criminal hackers in connection with the heist of 500 million Yahoo user accounts in 2014, marking the first U.S. criminal cyber charges ever against Russian government officials. What do we make of this? How safe do you feel?
Well, one guy in Canada gets caught. You know, we pick that guy up. The other guy gets arrested. One of the three gets arrested by the Russians and put in jail for something or other. I don't remember what that was. And one's out there. Now, do you really think, because two of these guys were, right? Am I wrong about this? But were officials of the Russian government, in the Russian bureaucracy.
Yes, ostensibly working with the U.S., yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what they may have been arrested for, but one gets the idea you put him in jail so he can't open up his yap. Anyway, what do I know?
Yeah, one of the amusing parts of that story was the fact that the feds think that just issuing these indictments or these charges is going to put a damper on the activity. I don't think the hackers abroad are going to be scared about this. They said that was an effective technique to reduce the hacking from China when they went after them legally. But I don't think working at that level, I don't think they're going to be afraid. Yeah. They're going to keep on hacking.
It amazes me that these companies don't have tighter controls and that we don't demand it, but there is no privacy anymore, sadly.
Yeah, it just does show how much they can do.
Absolutely.
Right. I don't think people understand that they can just control your computer. They're probably controlling your computer right now, Joe.
You know what?
Nothing to see there.
And,
huh?
You know, right now it's telling me that we're out of time. And they're controlling us to get off the air. So we will do that. My thanks to Alan, of course, Teresa, and Judy. Wonderful to have you all. Thank you very much.
Safe travels, everyone.
We'll be back after this.